Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Tuesday, October 14th, 2025. To begin with, as you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is WMEA.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. If you would like to make comments, you can unmute yourself by pressing star six. You can, if you like to make comments, you can virtually raise by pressing star nine. And if you press star nine again, that will lower the virtual hands for you. Everybody who's joining through the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you click on the raise hand icon, for some it may be under reactions. You can virtually raise or lower your hands. If people are able to utilize these tools, that will help because then we know that somebody's trying to make comments and we can have one speaker at a time. We do request that everybody please stay on mute unless speaking because that helps in eliminating any external noise. As you know, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Before you start making your comments, please state your name because it helps the interpreters in doing their job well. It helps people listening on the phone calls and when people listen to the meeting audio afterwards, it helps them as well. We do have a team presenting to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today. And I would just do a gentle reminder that please describe your slides for the convenience of the members who are blind or have low vision and for the members of the public. Chair Calabia, I can read the agenda out loud and then go through the roll call of the committee members if you concur.
Please do.
Okay, great. So before I start reading the agenda, I will share my screen. And if somebody can confirm that my screen is visible, I will appreciate that.
I see it.
Okay, thank you. So after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing today's meeting agenda and getting an approval for the last meeting minutes as well. And then we have Sarah Meyer, the Executive Vice President and Chief Customer Experience and Transformation Officer with us, along with Teddy Krolik and Sam Sarabine to discuss Metrorail Station's restrooms update. After that, the committee will discuss the work plan. The committee will discuss bus rapid transit as along with members' comments and discussions, and any committee questions or comments for DCDDOT. This was a request from Steve Caffin. At 5:45, we will go to public comment period, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I'm going to stop sharing my screen now and go to AAC roll call. While I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster.
I'm here.
Thank you. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Second.
Rico is here.
You
I'm
did
just
just say
confirming.
present, about 10 seconds, maybe less.
Okay. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher. Marcy Goldstein.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Caffin has informed that he will not be able to join today's meeting. Philippa Mazzell.
She
Present.
Hi. Wait, I'm here.
Oh, Steve. Okay.
I
Wonderful.
hear you know I'm with my college roommate whom I
Okay.
haven't seen since before the pandemic. So I'll be here a short while and then I'm going to have to bug out. But
Okay.
here I am.
Thank you.
Thanks. Sure.
Philippa Mazzell.
Present.
Thank you. Swathananda Kumar? Sandy Newsell?
Present.
Thank you. Bill Posner? Sarah Rod?
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray? Denise Rush?
Here.
Thank you. Paul Semelford? Patrick Sheehan?
Here.
Thank you. Philip Weintraub? Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting. At this point, Chair Calabia, I will ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
All in favor of the agenda, please say aye. Hearing no objections, the agenda is approved. Next item.
It's the meeting minutes, Chair Calabia.
I suggest that we hold off the meeting minutes because I see that Sarah Meyer is already here. And why don't we start with the action items for today's agenda?
Sounds good.
Sarah?
Okay, great. Hi, everybody. It's so nice to see you. This is Sarah Meyer speaking. Anu, are you able to show the presentation?
Sarah, I can do that for you.
Okay, great. You have the rights to do that, Teddy, so go ahead.
I do? Okay, great. Give me one second.
Take your time. I was trying to share it, and it doesn't. I have to sign in and do all of this fun stuff that... So I am here, everyone, to provide an update on our customer restroom access. While Teddy's bringing up the slides, everybody can just go and put themselves on mute so that we can reduce the background noise. So Metro strives to provide safe and clean restrooms for customers as a courtesy across the rail system. And compared to peer agencies across the country, including NYCT, that's New York system, Boston systems, Chicago systems, Metro currently offers the highest percentage of stations with public restroom access. We are currently operating at 94% of our stations do have public restroom access. That being said, we know we can always improve, both in terms of the accessibility of our facilities as well as in our public-facing communication. How are we doing, Teddy? I don't think we can see the slides.
You can't see the slide. Oh, okay. I've been sharing them.
I see one slide.
Maybe I just don't.
We're on slide number 3. It says Metro's current restroom policy.
Yeah, it looks good for my end.
Okay.
Okay. So as we know, right, at most stations, customers must request access from the station manager. And that's for a variety of reasons. One of which is that our stations were built prior to the ADA Act. Our restrooms are in hallways. You guys wouldn't mind putting me again. Thank you. So you can see here's a legacy station layout and design, this park. You'll see several doors that exist in order to get to that public restroom. And this is where a station manager, right where this little camera is, would unlock this door to allow access to the public restroom. We've been working really hard to get better signage out at many of these stations and put those pieces of signage up. You'll also see in our modern stations, we have better layout and design, right? Where a station manager doesn't need to open a locked door in order to provide access. We have several other barriers that exist to bringing all restrooms into full ADA compliance at rail stations. For example, if a restroom's door maneuvering clearance is blocked by a wall and an elevator shaft is on the other side of that wall, moving the wall to bring that restroom into compliance may not be possible currently. So what we've been doing is conducting routine inspections to identify accessibility barriers, prioritizing improvements, and making updates wherever possible. This reflects our ongoing commitment to expanding accessibility, enhancing facilities, and ensuring customers have an accurate and consistent information about restroom availability across the system. So far this year, we have completed the auditing of 57 stations, and all remaining stations will be completed by the end of November 2025. We've defined four types of restrooms across the system. The first type is ADA compliant or accessible restrooms, and these restrooms meet the requirements of the ADA and are fully accessible. We also have restrooms with accessibility features, and these restrooms include features such as grab bars, maneuvering space, or other accessible features, but do not fully meet ADA standards at this point. Some are substantially compliant and only need minor adjustments that are already planned, while others provide some accessibility features but still require additional improvements. Because of these differences, not every restroom in this category may meet the needs of all customers. We also have two other classifications. One is temporarily out of service, and those restrooms may be unavailable for short periods of time due to safety measures, facility upgrades, routine maintenance, or cleaning. And these are all restrooms expected to return to service. We also have other restrooms that are permanently out of service, and those are a limited number of restrooms that are closed and not planned to reopen. So how we're looking for you all to help us today is that we've begun installing new customer restroom signs at station manager kiosks and at restroom door entrances at five locations. The first is Cleveland Park. The second is Dulles. The third is Grosvenor. Fourth is New Carrollton, and the fifth is Potomac Yards. Going forward, our goal is to install these signs at all stations with ADA compliant bathrooms as soon as possible. So we're looking at our current estimate of making a signage package for 10 stations. We'd also like to update them with the new Metro branding. And so we're looking for your feedback on what combination of colors works best. We also have an example of this is the New Carrollton restroom signage mocked up in monumental bronze and white, which we believe maximizes color contrast and legibility. So I'm happy to take questions and would love to hear your feedback on our current signage pilot that we're launching.
Thanks, Sarah. I sent a few minutes before the meeting several photos I've taken of the customer restroom in Friendship Heights. And in contrast, or compared with two photos of customer restrooms in Seattle, Washington. Seattle, of course, opened their system in 1993, way after we did. So is it possible, Anu, for you to show this, the photos I just sent you?
Sure. Give me just a quick moment and I'll display. Sure.
Meanwhile, Sari, you're moving along wonderfully and much better and much faster than I anticipated. So congratulations. here are the photos that I showed. This is at the Friendship Heights stations just about, I don't know, 10 days ago, 12 days ago. There is a corridor. It may be possible for a wheelchair to pass through that corridor, but you'll notice that there are these used tiles that are piled along the side.
Right.
and there's some other equipment, which the other equipment may not be detrimental to wheelchair power passage, but this is the photo I took. If you could, then the next slide, Anu. This is the actual customer restroom, and it's very nicely kept. It does have grab bars. Sarah, you mentioned that perhaps not all of our current customer restrooms have such equipment, but this one does. And it's well maintained. The staff did not know I would be visiting. In fact, I didn't even tell the staff who I was when the kiosk manager let me in. The next slide, the next picture, Anu. Oops, you overshot. There is a maintenance schedule, which is really cool. And it shows the maintenance, the checking in the day, and on the right-hand side is the checking during the evening, and managers are expected to note when they checked it out. I imagine, Sarah, that it's the station managers that do it, or is it other staff?
It is a good question. I assume if it's a manager, it's a manager that's a custodial manager. That being said, it could be a station manager. I can take a look and look into that for you.
Well, anyway, it's really great that it's there. And as a matter of fact, there's text there saying, please note the time. And in effect, it says, be truthful about it. It's not that direct, but they're reminded to be accurate as to when it's been checked. The next photo, Anu. This is a photo of Seattle's system. And unlike our system, where in many stations, the kiosk manager, the station manager must come and allow you into the hallway leading to the customer restroom. In Seattle, they have this electronic button system. I pushed the button and I spoke to someone live, and I explained that I would please, could I please use the restroom? And that person says, yes. Just wait, press the button. I'll take care of pressing our button. And I gained entrance in just a matter of maybe a minute or so. We now have stations that do not require the station manager to permit entrance, so that's great. And I imagine that's at the new restrooms, the new stations, which have those restrooms. The next photo, and this is Seattle's. It's much larger than our system. Like the restroom I showed from Friendship Heights, it's virtually immaculate. It has grab bars. And it's very clean as the one I visited in Friendship Heights. So of the photos I've shown, the first one may take a little looking at by staff or managers about the old tiles that seem to be resting against the wall of the corridor to the restroom itself. I don't know if it'll ever be possible for us to install a button system as can be used in Seattle. I'm sure it's costly. I don't know how costly, but I wouldn't be surprised if we couldn't do it at all our stations. Sarah or Teddy, when there is someone who, when a customer does not need to have a manager come, how do they get in? Just by opening the door?
So in terms of the hope you're saying is to eventually build in some sort of electronic access system, right? That would be
Yes, that would be the hope. But I you know, I'm aware of the budget that WMOD is. So I'm not expecting it and certainly not expecting it right away. But with respect to gaining entrance in some of our stations, I think you mentioned that a station manager is not necessary.
Correct. In newer stations, the station manager is not necessary because the restrooms were built not in the back of house area, right? Where you have, for example, Friendship Heights, you'll see, right? That is the storage area in addition for all of the maintenance activities that are currently happening in that area as well. So you've got a lot of shared space and shared resources in the older designs. And we're fortunate that our new stations now have dedicated space for customer restrooms that do not require moving into a hallway that's only accessible by a key.
Yes. Now, you note that I did say I don't expect us to be able to budget for red button electronic system in every station. But what are the chances, though, of having some sort of system where station managers are not required?
Yeah, it's certainly in some of our work plans, right? In the sense that we are looking at electronic access and badging, you know, having employees use their badges instead of keys to access doors. So certainly this is something that we can take a look at and see if there is funding available to pilot or to do this in any of our station refurbishments.
So I gather that a station manager has a badge. The station manager hands it to the customer. The customer uses it to open and then gives it back afterwards. Is that correct?
That is correct. But if we have a badge reader, that means that we could easily put in some sort of intercom system similar to what you saw in Seattle. That would be much more preferable than trying to use somebody's badge.
Yes.
And have someone right at the MIC be able to scan video and then let somebody in with, you know, their keyboard remotely instead of on premises with a badge.
Well, I'm happy and I compliment you all for trying to figure out a way to obviate having to go to the kiosk manager. Any other questions?
Hello, Bill. Yes, we have three people with their hands up. First is Sandy Newsell, then Sarah Rod, and then Steve Caffin. So Sandy, go ahead.
Hi, this is Sandy Newsell. Sarah, thank you very much. Really appreciate you reminding us that these restrooms within WMATA stations are, what was your word, a courtesy, that in the older stations, we have to be aware of that there's not a mandatory thing. And I appreciate your saying that we have the highest percentage of publicly available restrooms compared to other metro systems. It looked like the signage was probably at eye level. I clearly need to go and take a look at your sort of beta testing signage in the five stations you mentioned. And I'll also be curious about the color contrast. And thank you. Appreciate very much that you are always cognizant of color contrast. But my question is, and I hear many low vision people comment about this, that the shape of the man and the woman on restroom signs are ridiculously similar, and we have to get our noses up pretty close to distinguish them. So while you were talking, I did a quick scan through ADA requirements for restroom signs, and apparently that's universal. I always love it when WMATA goes above and beyond to make things easier for us to see. I don't know if you can go back to the image of the sign that you had an example where there were three signs on the left of the slide that had a picture of a man and a woman indicating restroom availability. And obviously, if it's a co-ed or either or, it's not a big deal. But those are very similar to the ones I saw online. It's just that the skirt or dress or coat of the woman, it isn't all that much larger than for a man. Now, maybe women would be insulted if you made it a wider triangle. I don't know. But this has perplexed me for years, and many of my low vision friends have commented on the symbol shape is difficult to distinguish. But like I said, if it's an either or thing, it's not that as big a deal. So anyway, thank you for your presentation, and I hope to get a chance on Thursday to go look at some of the signs in at least one or two of the stations you mentioned. Thanks.
Sandy, can I just ask before you I do want to mention that the current option, what's currently installed, is a blue background. And so we are moving, right, to using our One Metro branding, monumental bronze and Capital Cream, and we call it statuary white. So I would like to move these signs into our current branding. And would love your thoughts and other thoughts on moving forward. I think, number three on the slide here provides the highest contrast. I do want to mention, just because design is important to me, that, I do like the warmth that the Capital Cream provides. But if this committee wants to move forward with using statuary white to provide the best contrast, I'm happy to move forward with option three.
Is it possible for us to have a copy of this so that we can?
Yes, of course.
Okay. The general concept of the bronze and a very light cream or white is on the surface, that's fine. I find white on blue much harder to read, but I'm only one pair of eyes. So
thank you.
I'll let somebody else go. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sandy. Next is Sarah. Sarah, go ahead.
Hi, this is the other Sarah. Thank you, Sarah, for the presentation. That was really informative. And I've got a bunch of questions. First, I want to say ditto to what Sandy just said. Happy to go look at signs, but I can't tell the difference between them on the screen that I am looking at the moment. I'm just using a cell phone, so they're too similar. But happy to go look in person. And one other random thing, I've had the same conversation Sandy has had about trying to distinguish the male figure from the female figure with other people who have low vision. And the greatest thing I've ever seen in all of Japan, basically all men's rooms are marked in blue and all women's rooms are marked in red. And so it's just, whether it's a sign or whether it's a wall that's painted or the door that's painted or whatever, but it's just sort of a universal thing. And I think it's genius, and I wish we would do that here. But my other questions, and I apologize if I just couldn't see it because of the small size of the screen. Did you have numbers specifically for those four different categories? How many fall into each of those categories? And then also, I'd like a little better explanation between the difference in categories three and four. So what makes something it's just offline temporarily? Do you mean like for a couple of days because there's a problem? Or do you mean that there's a bunch of work getting done, or you're thinking it's going to get done eventually? And then number four is things that are just, they're too hard for the time being? Or am I misinterpreting that? Thanks.
No, that's a helpful question. So the reason we do not yet have those numbers yet is because the assessments aren't complete. And we are working hard, right, to make as many of our restrooms ADA compliant as possible. And so we want to give our teams a little bit more time to work through some of those challenges. We do have several stations that do that currently have restrooms that are closed for safety reasons. So I do want to mention that there are restrooms at stations close to certain other stations that are open and available. But because of the high rates of vandalism, the high rates of assault that happen, unfortunately, against our colleagues that have happened as a result of these restrooms being opened, we did decide as an authority to close several restrooms to better protect our facilities and our staff.
Oh my.
I hope that helps explain some of the complexities here that we're faced with. We are not alone in facing this. Restrooms across transit systems there are certain issues that happen as a result of areas where people can close doors and can lock doors. And that is something that we always have to be mindful of. This adds another layer of complexity that so many of our restrooms are behind, even further locked doors that make some of our infrastructure available, right? The restrooms are near some of our back of house facilities that have electrical components and other, cleaning fluid that we want to make sure is kept safe. So again, we are doing everything we can to keep as many restrooms open as possible. And we've been doing, I would say a valiant job in trying to keep as many restrooms open for customers as possible.
Thank you. No, it sure sounds like it. I mean, I totally appreciate that. And as we all know, disabled people are at even greater risk of, violence, safety issues, things like that than the general public. So, in addition to the staff, we want people to to be safe if they're going to, go into a restroom, a back room behind a closed door or something like that. Certainly understandable. And hopefully there's things that can be done to address, safety issues as well as physical barriers because of construction, things that were done a long time ago, that sort of thing. I was just sort of curious about the difference between 3 and 4. One last question, and then I will definitely move on. And that is looking at the one that Tino mentioned or showed us photos of, where would that fall in your 1, 2, 3, 4 scale?
That is a restroom with accessibility features.
So number 2.
Yes.
Okay. And so obviously things could be cleaned up and made even better, but okay, great. Thank you.
We hope, right? I'm looking at Friendship. The assessment was complete. So we do have more information. I can look into it. I want to make sure that, again, that wheelchair turning radius is acceptable. Mr. Calabria is showing that there was someone left building materials in the hallway. Those building materials need to be moved. But the accessibility features within the restroom seem to be proficient. I just don't have that data on me at this moment.
Okay, great. No, that's really helpful. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. Next is Steve Caffin, followed by Denise Rush. Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you? One quick question, and then from you, and then I'll have my question comment. What percentage of the restrooms enter directly from the station, and what require that people go through some kind of hallway before they get into the restroom, and maybe the restroom is shared?
It's a very small percentage, Steve. It is the new Silver Line station where the restrooms were built with easier access.
Okay, so most of them are, you go through a hallway okay. So yeah, my comment is relates to safety. I personally won't go into a restroom that is situated like this with access to the public. It's just too easy for assault and too easy for theft, in particular, putting aside assault. And there's no way to control it because station managers have more important responsibilities minute to minute than monitoring what's going on. Me personally, all my life, if I see a hallway from a public area, I won't go into it for that reason. And I know your statement on safety says the same thing, that you're sensitive to it. My other concern relates to the occupying of restrooms, because oftentimes people lock themselves. If it's a one person restroom, people use that restroom sometimes for more than what it's supposed to be used for, and that can mean 15-minute wait. I don't know how that can be controlled. And I'm glad you said, providing restrooms is a courtesy. And I think we have to be mindful of that, because there are a lot of issues in a public area like a station relating to restrooms. And you seem to have a handle on them. So thank you.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Sure. Chapa, you want.
Next is Denise Rush, followed by Vanessa Coles, and then Patrick Sheehan. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Denise Rush, and I have been absent for quite a while, but over a year ago, Randy Clark said, I heard him on the TV say, we just finished millions of dollars on the restrooms. And that's what all I want him to do is say, retract that statement. They are not finished, number one. And number two, there is no map to tell me. Even if I wanted to plan a trip, there's no map saying this is an accessible bathroom, this is a non-accessible bathroom. You have to see the station manager or anything. There's no map to give you a breakdown. You cannot plan a trip. And now I am totally wheelchair bound. I can't plan a trip knowing what's available. Why is that?
I understand, Ms. Rush. And we are as impatient as you are on this front. And as we discussed last year, we have been putting together a scope of work, right, where individuals are going in to audit whether or not the stations have accessible bathrooms.
It doesn't take a year to have a map tell me what's available. It doesn't take a year.
So I do want to just mention, right, that we are a transportation provider. We have had a lot of initiatives currently going on with modernization, improving service. This is an important initiative to all of us. And it is the assessment process is not an easy one. You have to do a hundreds of measurements in order to determine if the restroom is accessible. And
okay, I understand that, but can you at least take back the statement that you have completed the restrooms? That statement should be retracted. I've asked over a year ago for it to be retracted, and just say we're working on it or something, but nothing from nothing equals nothing.
Understood. So I am hoping by the end of November, I will have a map on the website that states the accessible restrooms that are available. And that's a start. It's not going to be as many restrooms as we all would wish and want. That being said, again, it's a start. And we're going to keep working to try to make as many of our restrooms accessible.
So does that mean you're not going to get a retract? You're just going to get what you get?
So I'm not familiar with the statement that you're citing that the GM made. And I'm going to ask my colleagues to see if they can find it in a was it, did he say it publicly? Okay. I've been here for over 2.5 years, and I don't remember that specific statement. But if
I've been here 25 years, I remember.
Okay. Understood.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Rush. Next is Vanessa Coase, followed by Pat Sheehan. Vanessa, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. My name is Vanessa Coase. I'm middle-aged African-American. I have my hair in layers in a T-shirt. So, and I may be redundant because I'm on the phone right now, but I was curious, and thank you for attending the meeting. I was curious, the bathrooms, I know we're discussing accessibility, but are there family restrooms where any and everyone can go in the same one? Sort of kind of what Tino was hitting on, or are there individual male, female? What types of bathrooms are they?
There are different configurations. That said, the majority of our restrooms are one room restrooms that were originally architected in the system to be an employee restroom. That's why they're located usually back in far away in down a hallway. But we have been working over the last 20 years or so to try to open those up to as many customers as possible. And our newer stations do have restrooms with stalls, which is the standard moving forward for accessible restrooms.
Okay, so there's not just one single family type one. And then are there cameras near those entrances to the bathrooms?
We have about 30,000 cameras in the system, so there are cameras. Are they outside of every restroom? I am not sure.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Vanessa. Pat, Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you, Sarah, for a wonderful presentation, Pat Sheehan. Over the last 4 years, I've been working with ANSI to look at various accessibility issues in public areas and public buildings and all, and we spent 18 months I think on bathrooms, so I understand when you're talking about measurements in the bathrooms meeting ADA standards, there's just 101 things that you have to look at to be able to achieve those standards. It's very exacting. The Access Board has all kinds of information on that, ADA and all of that. And I missed a little of this because I got a phone call in the middle of when you were presenting. So I don't know if this question was asked, but what is the requirement under ADA to make bathrooms accessible in transit, on transit properties?
So Pat, I'm not a lawyer,
right.
And I don't believe I'm the best to interpret. Okay. The law. That is, that being said, when I worked at New York City Transit, we did not provide restroom access to our customers. Mm-hmm. And my understanding was that that was not in violation of any ADA law.
Right. And that's exactly, yeah, I think I'll maybe I can check with the people that from the ANSI group, but that's exactly my what I've heard too, but it's just I've never gotten a definitive answer on something like that. I think that's, first of all, I think that's important for us to know what's required under ADA. Everything that I've seen agrees with exactly what you're doing. So I think that's important for us to know because what's required under the ADA, particularly with wheelchair space, turning radius, and all of those, measurements of stanchions and, and all that sort of thing is really exacting. And so having four categories of what's accessible, first of all, what I guess what's required, and then what's fully accessible under ADA, and then the other three categories with definitions of those, I think is great. Also, I would echo what Denise says, making sure that we have the information not only just on sort of on maps as far as accessible bathrooms, but also places where people can find it in the stations is going to be critical. I know that having worked on national park area, national parks throughout the country, looking at all of their maps and everything, one of the big things that comes up are where are the restrooms, within the park area? Are they accessible and all of that? So I think having that as a feature within the WMATA system is great. Appreciate the assistance that you'll get from individuals on the signage area. And of course, the pictograms, I think, pr are pretty standard that they have for men's and women's. And then also with your signage, your raised signage and braille signage, that's pretty standard as far as what's required throughout the system. So hopefully all of those things can be incorporated where, as you probably guessed, where AAC is here to assist, help give feedback where where necessary, and keeping us informed on where the progress being made, I think is great. So I thank you for that, for tackling all of this. I know it's a big job, particularly when if you have to go in and start doing measurements to say A, B, C, D, and E are fully accessible under ADA. That's a lot of measurements right there. And then the other categories are very helpful too. So thank you for that. And I think we stand here ready to work alongside you on this project.
Thank you, Pat. And I just wanted to mention that there are many of my colleagues who are on this call as well, who have been working very hard over the last year trying to put all of these pieces together. And I want to recognize their efforts and also try to reinforce that we are all on the same page here. We want to make as many restrooms accessible as possible, and make wayfinding easier, and looking forward to providing the best customer experience possible.
Great. And maybe I can check with the ANSI group that I'm involved in to see, ask those experts what's required under the ADA as far as accessibility to restrooms. I can get back with you. Unfortunately, the last meeting we had, the experts from a lot of the federal government, including the Access Board and other areas, weren't allowed to join the meetings because of the furlough. So we'll see what
Understood.
happens with respect to that. Yeah, that's slowing everything down. But I can check with them because they're the experts, and get back with you to see what the experts say, because I certainly haven't been able to run it down, and I've been asking all the wrong people the right question for about 6 months. Still don't have a good answer. So, okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you, Patrick. Chair Calabria, we don't have any additional hands up at this point.
I just had one last question. Again, mindful of WMATA's budget, regarding Steve's concern about safety, and for other reasons. Lately, I've been inspecting assisted living senior quarters, and in the bathrooms or other places, there are buttons or pull strings that an individual can use in an emergency. I don't know if how complex it would be to rig an electrical system so that you could have a emergency button, but that's one thing. The second thing is, this also would be costly, making it possible for diaper changing in a bathroom. You know, many public bathrooms in private places, restaurants, etc., do have a changing, a fold down changing table, so to speak. That's something to think about. It's probably not at all an ADA requirement, but it would be useful for many parents. If that's possible to do in the newer stations, that would be great. But anyway, thank you so much, Sarah and Teddy. We really appreciate your report, and also the activities and how quickly you seem to be moving in regards to what we've been concerned about in the past. Thank you again, Sarah. Thank you, Teddy. Next item.
I do want to mention we have another presentation that Teddy is going to run us through. On the next step in some of our wayfinding efforts.
Okay, good, great, thank you.
Well, first, Sarah, I was going to ask Anu if we were okay with time. I know we're a little bit past our allotted agenda time. If you prefer, okay. We can come back next month too.
If you have time, we have time.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So we're going to be talking about a different topic here. Still important, but I think in some ways, actually, this is another great example where we don't have all the answers yet. And that's why we enjoy working with this group so much, because we are genuinely asking questions that we don't know the best solutions to yet. And today I'm going to present to you an interesting question, which you may or may not have thought of before, which is, Metro has various ways of presenting the rail lines that we have in rail stations. And there are some examples where you might see red, yellow, green. You might see other examples here. And I'm sorry that it's a little bit difficult to see all of these examples, so I'm going to describe them as well. But here on the far left side, I'm showing a general rail system map that shows all of the different lines. And then at the very top, actually list them in a stacked order, where we've got red, we've got orange, we've got blue, green, yellow, silver. But then next to that image, I've got a picture of a external pylon that we use to mark the entrances to our rail stations, where there it's not the same order. So there it's actually red, yellow, green. Whereas again, if you're looking really closely at the system map, you'll see that green was actually listed before yellow there. Then in this third example to the right, I'm showing a screenshot just that I took from my phone of using MetroPulse, which is the newest app that Metro is recommending customers use to find real-time information about both bus and rail. And here you can see that actually reading left to right, it goes silver, yellow, blue, green, orange. For the final example on the far right of my screen, I'm showing an example of a t-shirt. Again, we have lots of different places where our Metro Rail branding shows up. It's not just at stations, it's not just on maps, it's not just on phones, but it's also, again, on merchandise. And so there probably isn't an actually clear best answer of how to do it, but we would like to talk with you about some different options that we're considering. So here in this next slide, I'm presenting one option where we are using an order based on the order of when the particular line opens. So in this case, we have red as the first line because it opened in 1976, followed by blue, orange, yellow, green, and of course, silver, most recently in 2014. So this is one way where you would have red, blue, orange, yellow, green, silver, again, based on when they were actually introduced to the system. This is one option that we are considering, but it's not the only one. The second option is matching how the actual different lines are represented in the material world. So in this case, we actually know that the red line is always at the top. It was actually, again, designed this way that it is always going to be closest to the surface. The yellow and green lines are always going to be just below it. And then the orange, silver, and blue are at the bottom. You can see this today, for example, at L'Enfant, where you've got yellow and green on the top level. You've got orange, silver, blue below. If you go to Gallery Place, again, you always have red on top. So this is a slightly different order. Whereas again, if you were paying very close attention, you'll have noticed that in the order of line opening, it went red, blue, orange, yellow, green, silver. However, in matching the built world, you've got red, yellow, green, orange, silver, blue. Well, this isn't enough complexity, so I've got one more condition that I want to introduce to you guys. And this, again, shows you how challenging this work is, which is if you are going to introduce a certain sequence that will have silver, orange, and blue in consecutive positions, you have now stated SOB. Likewise, if you have blue immediately above silver, you've now created BS. If possible, we'd rather not have those combinations on mugs, much less maps or anywhere else. And so we're trying to think again about what is a consistent way that we can provide information about rail lines to customers in every conceivable context. Because we know that, again, if we're presenting them in consistent orders with consistent colors, consistent letters, that's going to reduce cognitive load, it's going to improve comprehension, and we'd like to, again, make our system the most accessible and easiest to understand as possible. So we have not figured this out. We are coming to you to talk through from an accessibility perspective and your personal understanding what you see as perhaps the most, again, we put it here as logical, predictable order for displaying rail discs. And I've shown, again, a few different options that we've gone through. I've shown you a few examples of all the different places. And this is really just a small selection of all the different places where rail discs show up and how they can be combined into different orders. And then I've shown you a few examples where we do it by the order of how they opened, by the order of how they actually show up in the stations. And I've also shown you an example where we tried not to put SOB and BS too close together. So that is the presentation. If we don't have much time to discuss, we can share this with you guys. We can hear your thoughts. You can send emails. But this is another example of customer experience working together with AAC to make a better system.
Anu, are there any hands up?
Chair Calabria, Sandy, go ahead. And then Patrick, and then Sarah Rod. Sandy, go ahead.
I feel like I should let Sarah Rod go before me once in a while, but off the top of my head, thank you for the laugh. This is great. Thank you for the puzzle. It's awesome. Okay. I think the first order of lines opening, only people over 50 might remember this, and people over 50 start to forget things anyway. I appreciate you're trying not to put BS and SOB together. I think everybody who can see looks at license plates all the time to figure out what dirty words were they trying to say. And I do like the logic of the different levels after writing. I don't ride Metro a lot, but it's just been in the last year or two being on this AAC and thinking about things more and more. I've finally learned to think such and such line is upstairs, such and such line is downstairs. And I did not realize that it was consistent across the system. But if it is, great. That is a logical way to order things, in my opinion. Just one opinion. Okay.
Next.
Patrick, go ahead.
I thought Sarah was next.
Okay, Sarah would
Is
like.
Sarah next? Yeah, you did
I'll
mention
go.
her before
I'll go
me.
next because I always go
Yeah,
after Sandy. And as usual, I agree completely with Sandy. I was going to say exactly the same thing that I appreciate the history, but then again, I'm also over 50. And I remember when the first one opened. As a little kid, I remember going and being very excited to ride the Metro. Anyway, but like Sandy, I think it actually makes a great deal of sense to do it in an order that helps reinforce other patterns in the system. And the only thing I will throw in that is new is, oh, what about purple? Where's that going to go?
Oh, well, you don't have to worry about that for a while.
But thinking
Good
about it.
point. Yes.
Well, I'll just interrupt to say that the purple line is not part of WMATA.
Oh, that's true. Technically, that's true. I was gonna, but it's always associated with WMATA, shall we say. Interesting.
Next.
Sarah, did that conclude your questions or
No,
comments?
actually, that wasn't mine. That was just comments on Sarah. And of course, agreeing with a lot of what Sandy and Sarah say on this. And I don't know if this means another discussion down the line, but I was not aware of all the different configurations of the way the lines were presented. It would be interesting to me to know why things have been presented in different orders for different reasons. I don't know. I mean, I think that with the red line on top, whatever configuration that was, that I always thought that was the standard going forward. So why were other configurations put forward? What was the thinking behind it? I guess that's what I want to know. But I would argue that having a standard configuration would make a lot of sense to a lot of people, particularly people coming into town, but also for, I think, those of us that are just used to looking at stuff this way and keeping it simple and uniform in the configuration would be great. But I'd love to know the reasoning behind the other configurations and why they were represented in a different way. That's just me. Just trying to fill up your meetings, Tino.
Next.
So I do just want to say there's a lot of Metro lore in here, right? We've got decades and decades of time, and everybody, there's not a lot of documentation on this front. Some people thought it was alphabetical. Some people thought it was the order in which the rail lines started to were launched. There's a lot of staff members like me trying to make sense of 40 years of inconsistency. So lots of different reasons for the past, but we do know we want to have a system in place for the future. It's just we need to find a pathway forward.
Any others?
This is Sarah again, just to muddy the waters a little bit more. You never did raise like, they could be done in alphabetical order. That also makes some sense. And then there are people out there that will tell you that it should probably go with like the Roy G. Biv rainbow in that order. So there's a lot of logics, but I think Patrick had the best point, which is whatever it is, just make it consistent.
Next.
Okay, Chair Kalabia, this is Anu. We do not have any additional hands up at this point.
I just want to mention something apart from the metro rail system. At some stations, there are a kind of standalone sign for the bus system and how it operates. And I looked at it with other riders one day, and we didn't know each other, but we were staring at it, trying to figure out how the different bus systems connect or don't connect. And if you don't recall what I'm referring to, at the very top right-hand corner, there was an even a box which said frequency is 12 minutes, moderate is something else. But anyway, on that score, the there was such a spaghetti of lines that ran in different orders or different colors, but it was very difficult for me and the other rider to try and figure out where to get off or where to get on, or and in terms of the frequency, how the lines show up in terms of this frequency later frequency, that kind of thing. Sarah, do you want to mention? I know that this might change too once the Better Bus network redesign shakedown takes place and we establish where, in fact, new bus stops are, or whether new old bus stops will be continue to get. So that's a while down the road. But in the meanwhile, would you comment on my confusion?
Yes, of course. Of course. I share your confusion. I share in our hopes and dreams to make bus mapping better. It is something that, you know, has certainly been on my team and I's list for since our arrival. We have had some procurement challenges with finding firms and contractors who are willing to do bus mapping work. It's just not a field that is built out at this point, because so many of our tools and technologies are digitally focused now in terms of, you know, using Google Maps or Apple Maps to help people with wayfinding. That being said, we are, you know, certainly trying to bring on contractors or vendors ASAP to help us with bus mapping. We have just been not as successful as we've been hoping, given the current market of cartographers that are out there right now.
Okay, thank you.
That helps you better understand sort of the system and what's happening, but we are working on it and hope to have better bus maps out over the next year.
Possibly of help in this regard is the Waymap system of Tom Pei. If that ever gets finished in design and is worked out more perfectly, it could be a supplement to the stationary kind of signs that have been put up. But at the moment, I'm not sure how well-designed Waymap is or how workable it is for customers, be they with disabilities or not. But anyway, Anu.
Calabia, this is Anu. Sandy has raised her hand. She has another question or comment. Sure. Sandy, yes. Go ahead.
Just a quick comment. So I'm over 50 and I'm already forgetting things. The circles, the discs with the letter for the metro line that you showed on the pylon, the red, yellow, green, single letter. So I can't even remember, but I think that the green used to be two letters. Anyway, are you moving forward on the single letter on the discs for the lines? I think it's a great idea that those single letters showed up really well on that pylon picture.
Yes, we are moving forward with the single letter discs because they allow the letters to be larger and reduces the visual clutter and the amount of information that we have to interpret in order to do wayfinding, right? It's not only that you need to figure out you're on the red line, you also need to figure out which direction you're going to. So the cognitive load here is significant, even for people under 50 and certainly all ages. And so what we're trying to do is reduce that complexity so that we can really focus on the core pieces of information people need to do proper wayfinding.
Sarah, you and your team, Teddy and others, you guys are just, you're ahead of us, but we'll try to give you feedback on the questions you've asked.
Well, we've been taking your feedback as often as possible. We're going to continue to do that. And you've been helping us tremendously. So thank you for all of your volunteer time in helping the system be better. We appreciate you and your time.
Well, thank you, Sarah and Teddy. Thank you very much. Anu, I guess that closes this agenda item.
Yes, at this point, we have no additional hands up, and I believe Sarah and Teddy covered what they needed to, unless anything additional. I think we are good to move on to the next topic, which is the bus rail subcommittee work plan.
Okay. So again, thank you, Teddy, and thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye. Well, you know, the work plan business is so subject to what comes up during the year. You can't predict everything. 2 years ago, we wouldn't have predicted working with Prince George's County on what Denise Rush, and I'm glad Denise is back again. Welcome, Denise, if you're still here. Denise Rush brought up the bus deserts in Prince George's County, and that was not forecast in any of our work plans, but it was useful, extremely useful. What we just heard this afternoon about customer restrooms. That was not in any work plan. And yet it's been very useful to deal with. So given that, I did mention Waymap, and while we should follow up on restrooms and Prince George's County, Waymap should be in our agenda for the coming year. I asked Steve, if he's still there, and Sandy, if they had other ideas for the work plan for the coming year, and hopefully you do. Is Steve still here?
I believe Steve is no longer connected on the meeting.
Okay. Sandy, did you have some ideas besides following up on what we've worked on? And yes.
So, you know, near and dear to my heart is signage. And although I started off trying to look at static, you know, signs that are printed and put up there, digital signs are also important in the rail system, on the bus system. It's overwhelming. And Sarah and Teddy have done a wonderful job, but I think we do need to continue to highlight some things. And as Sarah has frequently pointed out, consistency is really important. The signage on metro rail platforms, is there a key that WMATA could explain to us about where they put signs and why they put them there? Or should we just speak up and say, we noticed in this station, you can't find a sign to the escalators, or you can't find a sign to the elevators. It's difficult to find the sign to such and such. So signage is what I want to stick with. And I admit, I've been slacking. I was out of town a lot. I've had the flu twice in the last month.
Oh my God.
But I promise I'm going to draft up something and ask for input so that we can sort of present more for Sarah and Teddy's team to consider signage. And obviously,
I'm not real good with the bus side of things, so I'm going to really need help from you and Steve Caffin, who ride buses a whole lot more than I do, which is almost never. So that's the thing that I think needs to be added. And I think if Steve was here, he would probably be mentioning bus signage, both where there's bus shelters that have digital signage, like the metro platforms that have digital signage about next train. Can there be next bus signage that's easy to read? And Steve has also commented about the, well, Teddy has asked, and I think Steve may have mentioned from temporary to permanent signage. And this is, as Sarah said, there's a lot going on, and the Better Bus Network, the new lines, the new maps for the lines, and the new signage, you know, they've got temporary signs up, as I understand it, but they want to figure out what's the best way to present that signage before they sort of move on to the next round of signage. So there's plenty of work to be done on static as well as digital signs, more than we can accomplish in our lifetimes, maybe, but maybe we can contribute.
On that score, it was just in the newspapers either yesterday or today about bus shelters. And more than that, bus islands. And it occurred to me that as Prince George's County is beginning to fill some of those bus deserts in Prince George's, we should help them because we've thought a lot about bus islands. We've thought a lot about bus shelters and bus signs. And in fact, if I'm correct, with WMATA, bus shelters are built where and in such a way that they could create some budget money from the advertisements. And to the extent that that's true, that will leave a lot of communities without bus shelters, the fancy ones, which have ads and maps and the blinking electronic signs telling when the next bus is coming, etc. I recently took pictures of a standalone bus stop sign, not in the shelter, and the adjoining one across the street did not have the same features, but the one I was looking at and I've taken pictures of, I'll share with you, had electronic feature or that showed when the next bus is coming. And this was in a standalone bus stop sign. And as I said, the one across the street, the mate to that for buses going in the other direction, it did not have it. But in any event, just the one by itself is an improvement. Bus shelters, I think, have come a long way, and I've seen model bus shelters on bus transit materials, magazines, and that sort of thing. And we're going to take a look at that. I'm going to send a set of pictures to Efan Eponte, who is working on Prince George's County bus system, and will be building new bus stops in those deserts. We should help him by what we know. And also, Sandy, I gather that a colleague of yours has some expertise to share about bus islands. Whatever we learn from her, we should share. Were you going to say something, Sandy?
Right. I was going to mention the
The note that Anu shared today about a survey for people who are blind, and that I believe includes legally blind, but I'm not 100% sure about that, that DC has now got a survey underway, and they need real life people who can walk safely with a white cane but are blind to test out. And I'm sure what they're going to do is go to a few bus islands and ask for you to try to navigate something for the first time. And they will have somebody there, an O&M person, to make sure that you're safe. I've been on a survey like this that was looking at crosswalks, different designs for crosswalks in Maryland, and they just need input from real live people to help better inform what works, what doesn't work. So that's outside of the AAC, but anything that we can contribute to this study might help inform bus island design in DC and thus possibly other jurisdictions nearby.
On that score,
yeah.
I don't believe that our membership, or even within our membership, the bus rail subcommittee members should confine themselves to the printed agenda that we deal with once a month. We have built up knowledge, or we have questions, and knowledge that we have, we should share with others. With DC, which is requesting, and this is great. If DC improves its system, it helps us in Montgomery County, where I am, in North Virginia, where you are, Sandy. So I don't view our membership as confining us to what we deal with three times a month and once a month on bus rail. But if your colleague friend is able to share with us, maybe we should invite her to one of our meetings to discuss this. Is there anything else from other members? I wish...
Chair Calabria?
Yes.
This is Benu. We have three members with their hands up. Denise Rush, Patrick Sheehan, and Sarah Rott. So, Ms. Rush, go ahead.
And Denise, again, let me welcome you back. I'm so happy that you're able to join us when you can. And you started the PG County business, which we helped them a lot. And you started the customer restroom business, which is moving along. So Denise, we have a lot to thank you for. We of the bus rail subcommittee, even though unfortunately you've been unwell for a while and haven't been with us, welcome back today, Denise. Yes, Denise.
This is Ms. Rush. Thank you, Tino. I would like to say that I heard that you really want women to be in charge.
Fine.
The president or whatever, but it's not a woman. We want a good person, whether they are a woman or a man, just a good person. But I like I said, I've been doing it for 25 years.
Yeah.
You don't get overnight, you get it daily. You get it daily.
Yes,
it doesn't come to you overnight.
No.
And I've been doing it for 25 years, and I learn things on a daily basis. But you have to remember them, and you have to know where you started.
Yeah.
The AAC committee is different from what we used to be. We used to be a family, but it's different now, and we have to come up to date to what is being served to us now. But I don't know how many people know Heidi Case.
Yes,
but
I know.
Heidi Case, when you saw Heidi Case, she was in a wheelchair.
Right.
And she was a big lady. She was at Thomas Magnum's funeral. She had lost about 250 pounds. You did not know her. And she walked by herself.
Really? Wow, that's
not. She is not in a wheelchair.
Wow.
She is,
that's amazing.
She is walking. You wouldn't know her.
Yes.
You wouldn't believe it. You just wouldn't believe it. But yeah. The AAC, we need the information about the services. Thomas Magnum had a beautiful service. I can't see, but I didn't see any AAC members there. But were there any AAC members there other than myself?
I can't. I don't know, but we did have an observance at the last meeting, remembering his work and expressing our condolences and such. But I don't know who gave it to him.
Well, at the board meeting on Thursday, I said I need someone to ride with me and wait for the bus. Definitely in Prince George's County, there's the craziest bus system. You just stand there. It doesn't tell you when it's coming. It doesn't tell, it's like you say, you just stand there. But I have someone that's going to stand there with me on the board and experience it themselves so they can understand when I say a desert.
Yes.
So they will understand a 210 desert. And so the person's going to ride with me and stand and wait. And we're not going to go that far, and it's going to take all day long.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. And I guess from what you say, we should continue to monitor the progress in Prince George's County and help out where we can. But thank you again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, because it's definitely a desert of stores, sidewalks, accidents, everything. There's a desert.
Yes.
It's bad. And they got to pay some attention to 210 Port Washington in that area.
Okay. We'll take note of that in our records. I am going to send some stuff to Ifana Panti, and I'll mention that we remain mindful of the problems that he's facing and that the county is beginning to try and correct. Thank you again, Denise. Who is next, Anu?
Okay, next is Pat Sheehan, then Sarah Rod, and Philippa Mazel. So, Patrick, go ahead.
Sure, I'll make mine pretty quick. A couple of, a lot of good comments for this upcoming work plan. I know one of the other areas that that has come up in the past has been all backdoor, all-door bus entrance. And implementing that, ensuring that that is happening throughout the system. Right now, I know that's pretty inconsistent. So getting an updated report on that, I know that Dr. Lowe was interested in it from the board level. And so she was at a recent RAC meeting asking RAC members what they know so that she could study that and see how that could be implemented. The other things, of course, been noted have been, you know, Prince George's County. That's great. I think an overall bus stop review would be excellent. What determines a full, implementation of the bus stop with all the accoutrements there versus a pole in the ground? I don't think we know that yet, and I think that would be good to know. The other areas that we have with respect to rail, I think, although it would be could be fairly technical, I think understanding what is going on with track signaling and why that what it is and why it's important would be good for this bus rail committee to understand, because that's going to be one of the things going forward with the I believe, and we'll find out more, by the way, with reports going out on, I think it's October 29th from the DMV Moves Task Force, and November 17th with the final recommendations. Okay. And there will be, by the way, Tino, there will be Avalabita input suggestions regarding those recommendations going forward. So, and then you've got other areas like bus rapid transit. What is it? What are they looking to implement, and along what corridors? Those would all be areas that could take a pretty full discussion at one of your meetings, those three or four areas that I mentioned.
Okay, good. Next, is somebody else?
Yes, Sarah Rod, and then Philippa Mazel.
Yeah, this is Sarah. So there's a bunch of things that have come up in the last year that I think we probably need check-ins on, in addition to what's already been mentioned, in terms of the Better Bus Network, the changes that were made to different lines. I know there's more that are going to be coming, kind of what went well, what didn't go well, any place in particular where, especially, you know, our particular community has sort of lost access or gained access would be good to know. I think we were keeping tabs on the tap and go for the buses that's been implemented for rail. And then one particular thing that came up when I, you know, a year ago when I first joined, and I haven't heard anything about it since, on the buses, there's a new system for strapping down or securing wheelchairs. That both the city of Alexandria was looking at, and I believe WMATA was looking at, where there's basically giant magnets that are going to hold wheelchairs in place. I and several wheelchair owner users that I know are vehemently against this particular system, at least the way we saw it. And it is now in limited operation in Alexandria. It's got a whole bunch of problems, including the people riding backwards, which it makes people, car sick, seasick, whatever the proper term is, motion sick. It also limits people's visibility, so they can't see the signs that tell them when stops are coming up, or see what the stops look like to know when they're supposed to get off. They're visually not in contact with the bus drivers anymore. I realize it's supposed to be a great technical solution, but it is in reality not something that I think we want to support. And I don't know where that stands for WMATA, but I would certainly like an update on where that is. And if we get a chance to vote to say that we, as the people who are going to be using it, don't want it.
Have you been in the securement mechanism yourself?
I did borrow, yes, one of my kids' wheelchairs to use it. Yeah. They both tried it out and really don't like it. And one of them was forced to do it on a trip in Alexandria recently, and was basically completely incapacitated for several hours afterwards because they were so motion sick from having to do that, and completely stressed out because they couldn't keep track of where their bus stops were and things like that. And they couldn't signal the driver. And anyway, it was not a good experience.
Okay. Well, we should look into that. Anyone else have a suggestion that we should look into?
I'm sorry, repeat that, Chair.
Yeah. Is there anyone else who has a suggestion?
Yes. Philippa has her hand up, so Philippa, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't have a suggestion on that.
But do you have another?
I have a comment, yes, on something else. Well, for 3 years now, and I've kind of gotten so used to it, I just stopped bringing it up. But the lights on the escalator going from the mezzanine to the platform at the 13th and U Street station, on the 13th Street side, are so bright they're blinding. I've been saying this for 3 years. They've got them. They're larger than most of them. They're up higher than most of them, and they're just blazing in your eyes. I've just taken to looking the other direction when I go down. But when I was on the other day, it was a woman getting on with her little boy, and the little boy was like, "Mommy, I can't see. I can't see."
Oh my.
And because the lights were, they're right at eye level for him. They were right in his eyes. And he just didn't know what to do. He just started screaming, "I can't see, I can't see." And she looked at him, she couldn't figure out what was going on. And I told her it was the lights. And so I'm bringing it up again. And if someone can, I've been asking about this for 3 years. I'm sure it's been at least 3 years. They've done a thing about it. They are just too damn bright. They are blinding. And it just doesn't make sense that I have to get, or anyone else has to get on the escalator and either look the other way or have all that light glaring in their eyes. So if we can get someone in for, I'll be traveling on November 12th, but if we can get someone in to discuss that, I'd be happy. And the other thing is that whenever I don't ride the buses a whole lot, but whenever I do, I'm either on the bus stop with people complaining about they don't know where the buses are going, the stop that they used to go to, there's no buses stopping there anymore. They're on the buses complaining, and I keep telling them you need to call Metro. So I'm just wondering, is anyone alerting Metro that they don't like these non-bus stops? And the system, I assume they'll learn over time, but not having bus stops sometimes for 2 or 3 blocks for people who may be mobility impaired, senior citizens on a cane, on a walker, et cetera, with groceries, with a baby buggy, all of that. I think, it's just ludicrous. I don't understand why the bus can't stop. It's not like it takes forever. It's not like 500 people are getting on and off at every stop. So if someone's there or someone wants to get off, no one wants to get off and no one's at the stop, keep going. But we don't understand that. So I'm just curious, is Metro getting any feedback about that? Because I may go out and rabble rouse and get people to give feedback.
Well, Allison, and I forget her last name, she's in charge of the Better Bus Network, and they're implementing it now, of course, since June 29th. But they've also said they're going to be reviewing it. By December, there may be a shakeout final decisions on restoring bus stops that were taken away or changing bus stops or adding bus stops. I think that's coming up.
Okay.
On the other hand, that's in December. Maybe we should have. Do you remember Allison's?
You mean Allison Anderson or another?
It's an Allison with two L's. She is in charge of the Better Bus
Yeah,
Network.
I think the last name is Davis.
Oh,
Oh,
Davis.
yeah.
Okay.
Davis. Maybe we could have a new, maybe you could have Allison Davis come to us.
Or Al Himes, Dane,
Before,
Al Himes. Yeah,
Oh,
they were
okay.
or whoever.
And I'll bring it up then, but one complaint in particular was that when the buses go up into the MedStar area where the VA rehabilitation and all that is, that they don't even stop at those hospital, those places anymore, and people have to get out on crutches and canes and all that, disabled, one leg, whatever, and walk up to, walk a distance to wherever, whichever facility they're trying to go to. So I'll bring that up as well.
Yeah. Well, they're examining these problems right now, and they say that there will be finalized, I think, in December. But before they're finalized, given the kind of situations you've been describing, maybe we should have Allison Davis come to us, well, November, before they finalize this. So, Anu, could you add that and put that up, please, on the agenda for November?
Oh, so Chair Calabia, I'll just share this that that's already being worked on, and we are in communication with the team, and they are expected to come, if not November, then definitely in December, because the meeting will be on the 8th of December, and the changes will be implemented towards the end of the month. So we are working on that schedule. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
It may take more than a month for them to make these final arrangements. So, isn't it possible to have them come in November?
We'll reach out again and see what works. Just want to make sure that they don't lose out on any information. So we will definitely reach out to them again. Yes.
Okay.
And just to say, I co-signed what Sandy was saying and Sarah was saying earlier about the signs. I didn't see a need to repeat what they were saying, so I just stayed silent. Okay.
So this is Sandy. Can I speak up and say, I think Tino, the Better Bus Network has talked about revisions in December, and I don't think that we should consider it final. I think they are also talking about 6 months beyond that, also, possible revisions. They're open to, or they've said they're open to input. And I think Al Hines has already spoken to us once since the Better Bus Network started, but that was very early on.
Yeah,
Right.
I don't think it's too late or too early to have them before they really begin to finalize it. Yeah. And even after they finalize it, in quotes, it may require change, but it's easier to have them change it now before they finalize it the first time, you know. So do what you can anew to have them come in November. Is there any other hand up on a suggestion?
I do not see any additional hands up at this point, and we are at 5:41. If you would like, we can go to public comments and see if we have any members of the public to give any comments.
Yeah, let's go to public comment.
Okay. So I just want to state that if we have any members of the public on this meeting, and if you would like to make any comments, please let us know now. You can either raise virtual hands. If you're on phone, you can press star 9. If you are on a video conference, you can click on the hand raise icon. It could be under reactions as well. Or if you'd like, you can send a chat message. I'm not seeing any members of the public, Chair Calabia, on this meeting any longer.
Okay.
Well, we do, but I'm not sure if they're connected to make any public comments. At the same time, I just want to remind that any members of the public, if you would like to make comments before or after the meetings, you can surely do so through emails at metroaacchair@wmata.com, and that's spelled out metroaacchair@wmata.com. Or you can call and leave a message at 202-962-1100, and we will follow up. So, Chair Kalabi, at this point, I'm not seeing any members of the public, their comments in the chat, or any hands raised.
Well, then we should return to the review of the record of the last meeting, correct?
Yes.
Delayed that. So we can do it now, correct?
Sure, please.
Yeah. Well, as I said at last week's meeting, in September, the Bus Rail Subcommittee dealt with the Prince George's County bus service. And in fact, we were fortunate to have Ifan Ipanti come and tell us what's up. And I'm reminded that we asked him to share models of the bus shelters or bus stops that he's going to be using when they construct the new bus routes and provide bus stops and bus shelters. I'm just reminded that. I guess I should remind him that he said he would show us examples of what he had in mind. We also heard about the Navy Yard escalator and elevator service project. And I roughly declined defined the next transportation bill. And so you've had a couple of chances to review the draft that Anu prepared. Is there a vote to approve it? Well, I'm asking for a vote to approve the minutes of that meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
A motion to second, I'm sorry, a second for that motion?
I'll second. This is Sandy.
Yes. Having moved and seconded, are there any votes against the action? Hearing no objections, the draft review of September's meeting is hereby finalized and approved. What's next, Anu?
Okay, so the next topic of discussion on the schedule, on the agenda today was bus rapid transit as a committee discussion.
Okay. Someone mentioned that earlier in the meeting.
Patrick Sheehan did, yes.
Who did?
Patrick.
Okay. Before Patrick continues with that subject, I'll note that bus rapid transit is something that is not new. It's been around. In my own home county of Montgomery County, bus rapid transit has been started and ongoing with ride-on buses. And bus rapid transit outside of our DMV, it's been in work in New York City, and a couple of those new bus rapid transit avenues have really cut in half the amount of time that buses go from the west side of New York to the east side of New York and vice versa. In our discussion, Patrick, maybe you can point out where there have been problems in implementing bus rapid transit. So, Pat, go ahead.
I think, Tina, I don't have final numbers or final routes on that. I think that there are, according to the DMV recommendations, that'll come out the end of October, I think the 29th, and then with final recommendations coming out on November 17th, that you're going to see six bus rapid transit routes that they've looked at pretty seriously over the years. I know that one of the ones that will be that's being looked at pretty heavily is Georgia Avenue. I think 355 has been looked at. I did not see any of the other, I didn't see anything really within Prince George's County that reflected a bus rapid transit route. But these are areas that have been studied fairly significantly over the last, I'd say, 5 years or so. And so they're pretty well defined as far as what they can do and how they move people and how quickly they move people. So I think that having the experts come in, well, first of all, let's see what gets done on the on November 17th with the final recommendations as far as bus rapid transit goes, as far as the routes that they recommend, because that'll be something that the COG and WMATA and the recommendations of the task force will put out there. I do think that's a fairly critical area going forward.
Patrick, are the recommendations going to The DMV or to whom?
What's that? Bus Rapid Transit?
Yeah, you said that.
On DMV October, moves? Yeah.
It's going to DMV moves or is it?
Right. So that will be one of the set of recommendations coming out of the DMV moves committee on November 17th.
Okay.
Areas that they're recommending for bus rapid transit.
Okay.
And so it'll be interesting to see what happens on October 29th when they meet to discuss it and then having their final recommendations in November.
Okay.
And then the other areas of recommendations, of course, Tino, I think that will be of interest are going to be bus prioritization, which I think is critical, which I think will move more slowly because it involves local and the jurisdictions and, you know, getting rights of way and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The other thing would be signaling, all about the signals on the track, track signals. I think that's a very critical area, although it's pretty technical and kind of boring to listen to. I think it's something that is one of the number one priorities going forward. So at a large, at a high level, I think it would be important for this group to know at least what it is, why it's important, and how it's going to impact the system. The only other thing that I'll say is going back on the floating bus stops. I just signed up for that study going forward. The group that is doing that study is very much data driven with regard to intersection design. A lot of what Sandy said, intersection design, being able to navigate, floating bus stops, how they're set up, is their universal design, which we know pretty well we don't have. So they wanted to try to make decisions based on data as opposed to just anecdotal decision making. So what they are doing is taking names. People can answer a questionnaire. The group will get a list of individuals that will will participate in the study. And as was indicated, there will be an orientation mobility instructor there. Very, very precise and data-driven with the different bus stops going forward, and then making some recommendations. There are also accompanying studies going on with the Transportation Research Board on floating bus stop, what's going on nationwide with certain recommendations, and synthesizing all of that information is going to be important. I think it's interesting that this is going forward, in Washington, D.C. area, particularly because in the past you've seen a lot of the research studies all the funding being removed for that. So I think this is significant that this is going forward. The group that's doing it is, I was told, has done this before. They have a lot of experience in this area, so it should be very interesting. I was a little skeptical at first because I felt we've been at this floating bus stop or bus islands discussions for at least 8 years, particularly in Montgomery County.
Yes,
what else are we going to learn? But in talking to people who are taking names for the study, they let me know that this is going to be a different type of study, data-driven, very specific, so they can prove some points as to how these bus stops should be, what's wrong with the bus stops, how they should be designed, all that sort of thing. So we'll see.
Patrick,
yeah.
You and I both know Matt Johnson of
right.
the Montgomery County bus system. He's been with us. You and I may have separately been with him as he's shown the community the existing bus islands.
Yes.
Is he part of this larger group that you've just mentioned?
I don't know if he's part of this larger study. I know that the recommendations that that he has put into place have gone into what's called a toolkit in Montgomery County, which this group is very familiar with, because you've got people organizing this study that have worked with Matt Johnson. So I think you've got a lot of recommendations going forward. I think what this group is trying to do is to look at those recommendations and have data or work with data to try to support those conclusions. So it's just not anecdotal, but it's data driven as far as decisions going forward. So we'll see.
Sandy, yeah. You brought to our attention this woman expert who is can comment on bus islands, that sort of thing. Can you tell us her name and what you know of her, whether she'd be able to join us at some point?
So the person you're thinking of, Mary Beth Cleveland, is an O&M instructor, and she's the person who let me know about this study. I don't believe she's running this study. In the past, she's let me know about another study, but an outside contractor, for lack of a better word, a group that.
Right. And Sandy, I just talked to Mary Beth the other day, because I'd known her for years in Montgomery County, and she actually is taking people's names. She's going to turn them over to the people who are conducting the study, and they will pick the subjects that they want to interview over the next couple of weeks. So Mary Beth, and just Tino, so you know, Mary Beth has been extremely involved in writing the handbook and working with Matt Johnson. So she's all in this group with respect to floating bus stops. I don't know that she would be able to share any more than this group knows right now, but she's certainly moving forward and is very integral into the process going forward. Yes, she's excellent. Very much on the side of safety, universal design, and from an orientation and mobility standpoint, knows her craft very well. She's excellent.
Terrific. Well, at some point, I guess we might have her stop by, but hopefully it'll be before everything gets locked up that we are then kind of frozen out of what gets locked up.
So, right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here, Atino, as far as data-driven design.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her name is Mary Beth?
Mary Beth Cleveland, yes.
Okay.
Orientation mobility instructor in Maryland. And she's very well known and does a great job.
Well, if you can think of a good time to have her come to us, that is a good time in which we could have some influence on what's ultimately decided. What is difficult is after things are ultimately decided and then we get pulled in, it becomes useless or relatively useless to comment on it after it's been decided.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, we've got about 60 floating bus stops already in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah.
With various degrees of accessibility built in. So you've got things like accessible pedestrian signals that can be implemented or brought in, but they want to be able to figure out find out whether these things are really helping to slow down bike riders and making a difference when blind pedestrians are trying to cross over to bus shelters and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I agree that they need to be improved. And going forward, they want to make sure they're making the right decisions based on the data.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Labia, I just wanted to mention that we are at 5:59 and we are going to lose our.
Okay. So there's nothing else that anyone wants to bring up before we adjourn? If not,
you're not finishing the pencil.
I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second for the motion to adjourn. Anyone?
Second.
Having heard that, is there any objection to adjourning now? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, all. Thank you. Okay.